spreading huge costume-feathered wings, two of the most agile performers leapt from high transparent shelves, buoyed by suspensers hidden in their suits. They swooped like hawks down to the stage, and then the winged performers swooped back up into the misty cloud, followed by a tangle of beams that sketched a net in the air. The crowd let out a gasp, then applauded loudly. Admiring the technical aspects of the displays, Paul squinted at the arrangement of mirrors that he and Bronzo had installed, followed the lines, and remembered the pattern he had tested many times. The web work was complicated, composed of many strands of light, but he had been meticulous in setting up the grid, and he remembered every step of the process. Gradually, though, he began to sense something subtly out of order. He and Bronzo had followed Rainvar's precise instructions, testing beam paths, aligning every mirror, checking and double-checking the reflections. He knew every strand of the pattern they had laid down, as well as the five amplifiers. Though the remarkable tapestry of light was beautiful and dizzying, he saw that some of the angles were wrong. Several key intersections were not in the right places. No one else would have noticed, but Paul saw additional lines, out-of-place vertices. It was as if he had expected a five-pointed star, but instead saw a six-pointed star, only dozens of times more intricate than that. He tried to catch Bronzo's attention, but his friend was on the opposite side of the balcony, engrossed in the performance. His pulse quickening, Paul turned his attention back to the mirrors studded up and down the prismatic walls in an effort to understand what had changed. Soon, one of the largest flashes was scheduled to take place, a fishnet of incandescent skeins of light at a climactic point at the end of the first act. He could find no other answer. Someone had climbed up there, moved the reflective surfaces, and added a substation that looked similar to the others. An amplifier. But who would have put an amplifier there? Perhaps Rainvar had asked other members of his stage crew to change the setup. Maybe the explanation was that simple and innocent. Then again, Sielto had cautioned him. As the face dancer antics reached a crescendo, Paul edged forward in his seat. The simulated storm built, and the sonic rumble of thunder echoed inside the magnificent Theater of Shards. Paul's gaze traced where the next network of beam paths would converge, and suddenly he knew that the added amplifier meant something was amiss, something that might use the architecture of the theater itself for a dangerous purpose. He had no time to explain to his father, but he knew what he had to do. The dramatic storm reached its climax, and the flying face dancers landed among the other costumed figures for a complex dance that would serve as the finale of the first half of the show. Paul shouted at Alra Keo,
"Governor, watch out!"
She gave a dismissive gesture in the midst of a boom of simulated thunder, but Paul threw himself bodily onto the governor, knocking her out of her chair and into Praeto Heron. They all tumbled to the floor. A dance of hot threads, coherent light bouncing from mirror to mirror, pumped through the amplifier and converted into a bludgeon of energy. The blast of heat and ionized air vaporized the wobbling chair that had held the governor, spraying wooden fragments in all directions like flechette darts. Deflected by the prismatic balcony, secondary beams set fire to hanging pennants, a small buffet table, and a guard's red uniform. The pulse lasted less than a second, and in the sudden, blinding silence, the members of Rainvar's troop stumbled in their dance. The stunned audience hesitated with a collective indrawn breath, trying to fathom whether what they had just seen was part of the performance. A large black starburst in the governor's balcony showed where the deadly beam had struck. Duke Leto grabbed his son's shoulder.
"Paul, are you all right?"
The young man scrambled back to his feet, tried to compose himself.
"She was in danger, sir. I saw what needed to be done."
The governor looked at him in shock, then barked at her guards.
"And you all missed something, despite the warning from this boy and his father.
There will be a thorough review, and I want every guilty person arrested."
The Balut guard succeeded in extinguishing the fires and blocked the exits, as if expecting a full military assault on the private balcony. Dr. Yui quickly checked Kyo and Preto Heron for injuries. The terrified audience began to stream away from their seats, trying to escape, some pushing others out of the way in panic. Down below, ushers and security men commandeered the public address system and demanded that the performance be shut down and everyone remain in their seats. Few people heeded their calls for calm. In the main arena, a frantic Rainvar and his face dancers clustered together at center stage. The flying performers had stripped off their costume wings, and now the whole troupe stood back to back, ready to fight for their lives if the crowd turned against them. As Paul looked at them, they rippled in his vision, and other audience members cried out, shouting toward the stage. Paul saw what others did not, that Rainvar had used his master jongleur powers to camouflage his troupe, making them vanish from the view of most of the audience. Were they part of the failed assassination attempt, or just protecting themselves from a mob?
"It's all over now," Jessica said. "Paul, you saved the governor's life. Maybe all of your lives."
Guards began to flood the balcony, much too late to do anything, but they searched for other surreptitious assassins. Leto was shaking his head while anger suffused his stormy expression. "How did you know, Paul? What did you see?" Standing where the governor's chair had been, Paul explained, trying to catch his breath.
"The beam paths were changed. Mirrors and an amplifier were added. With its architecture, the theater itself became a weapon. If you study the performing area blueprints, you'll see what I mean."
Romber strode forward, grinning at Paul. "Vermilion hells. Fine work, young man." Paul didn't want to take all the credit.
"Bronzo could have seen it too."
The other boy crowded close, his face pale, eyes wide.
"I should have figured it out earlier. Rainvar told us about the original architect, the lost secret of the theater that died with him. The Theater of Shards was designed as a set of focusing lenses for exactly this sort of assassination. Apparently, the secret wasn't lost completely."
Romber clapped Paul on the shoulder, barely restraining the strength of his artificial limbs. "But it was you, young man. Leto. Be proud of him." "Never doubt my pride in my son, Romber. He knows that." Then the cyborg Earl paused, as if something tickled the back of his mind. A dozen guards poked around in the balcony seating area. Others had already whisked the governor away to safety. The shouts and turmoil made the background noise in the arena deafening, but Romber continued to concentrate, using his enhanced hearing. "Do you hear that vibration? A high-pitched tone?" Alerted now, Paul felt the balcony's crystalline support structure thrumming like a tuning fork.
"Some kind of resonance?" he asked.
Suddenly he realized that the structure of the Theater of Shards was designed to reflect and intensify not only light, but sound. What if the lasers had merely been an opening salvo? A trigger to set up the vibration in all that layered crystal, reflecting the beams back and forth into a standing wave. The sound would continue to build, but the delay would be long enough to lure others closer. Romber moved with all the force and speed his cyborg body could manage. He knocked Bronzo away as he pushed Paul to the other side of the balcony.
"Move!"
But he couldn't get out of the way himself. The invisible but intense acoustic hammer slammed into Romber like two colliding highliners, smashed him between a pair of oncoming sonic walls. He crumpled. The echoes of the blast hurt Paul's ears and made his skull ring. He pushed himself up to his hands and knees, looked around. His parents had both been knocked flat. Jessica reeled, disoriented, but not severely injured. Paul was stunned, and the ringing remained in the back of his mind. A trap. A double trap. First, the concentrated blast of the summed lasers, and moments later a second sonic onslaught, killing blows of light and sound. Three of Keo's guards nearby were crushed, dropping to the ground, killed instantly. But Romber, even with his artificial reinforcements, polymer-lined torso, and prosthetic arms, the cyborg Earl's spine was bent as though someone had taken his shoulders and pelvis, then twisted him like the lid on a stubborn jar. His right prosthetic arm was folded back in on itself. Blood streamed out of his nose and eyes, and a wash of hemorrhages darkened his cheeks beneath pulped skin. Romber! Leto threw himself down alongside his friend, who had been at the center of the invisible blast. Yui, help him! The Sook doctor carried a minimal medical kit at all times, but nothing sufficient for this. Anguished, Yui knelt beside the destroyed remnants of his most important patient. Bronzo was on his knees, sobbing over the fallen man. He touched the smashed shoulder.
Father. Father. Not now. I can't lead House Vernius without you. There's too much at stake. Too much we still need to say to each other.
Earl Romber Vernius opened his eyes, and a croak of unintelligible sound slid out of his throat. His artificial lungs were damaged, and he could barely breathe. Blood and nutrient liquids covered his face and leaked out onto the floor. Leaning over him, Bronzo continued,
I love you. I forgive you. I'm sorry for what I did, for leaving you, for denying.
Romber twitched, rallied, and gathered a few last shreds of energy. He couldn't see anyone, barely managed to form his broken thoughts into words. Bronzo leaned close, desperate to hear his father's final words. Romber whispered,
Is Paul safe?
Then he shuddered and died. Bronzo reeled back as if struck with a physical blow. Paul took a step closer to say how sorry he was, but Bronzo flailed out at him, then fell weeping beside the mangled, lifeless body.